The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. On Monday, May 20th, the UK Parliament's House of Commons held a lengthy discussion about medical marijuana and government policy regarding prescription and availability of medical cannabis. We're going to hear some of that debate in a moment. First, on Wednesday, April 24th, the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania City Council held a hearing on the budget request for that city's district attorney's office. Philly District Attorney Larry Krasner testified before the council. At-large City Councilmember Al Taubenberger asked D.A. Krasner about supervised injection sites.
I do have a question that relates to a question that I'm asked many times as a City Councilmember at large regarding safe injection sites. Mm-hmm. Do you have a position on that? Or
I do have a position in the sense that the only issue that I will face or may face is whether or not as the local prosecutorial authority, I would prosecute it. And my answer has been and remains that I will not prosecute a responsibly run supervised injection site for the same reason that in a prior life when I was a young attorney, I defended Prevention Point, which we now all accept as being an appropriate clean needle exchange program, and we now all laud its benefits in terms of preventing the spread of hepatitis C, preventing the spread of HIV at a time when AIDS really was a terrifying specter that killed over 900 people in a single year. We now all accept that as being an okay thing, but we didn't then. At that time, Ernie Priate, who was the Attorney General, was threatening to prosecute all of them, and he was threatening to do so because he had a claim, and it was not a frivolous claim, that he could have gone after them for violating contraband, a contraband-type statute, meaning that the needles were, in fact, for the purpose of people who would then take it and use it to inject drugs. I support not prosecuting supervised injection site for one reason that is moral and one reason that is legal. And the moral reason is that dead people cannot recover. And if we do not give people the ability to survive long enough to achieve their own recovery, then I think we have all failed. There are 3 to 4 people who die every single day in Philadelphia from fatal drug overdoses. Most of it is coming from opioids, and especially with fentanyl, which is so volatile, it's incredibly unpredictable. Fentanyl has now, by the way, creeped into the crack supply. And so we are seeing people who may have been addicted to crack for 25 years doing what they have always done and ending up dead. It is a bona fide crisis, and that is the moral reason as far as I'm concerned. I don't know how I could do anything else. But there is a legal reason, which is that under Pennsylvania law, we have the defense of justification. And what we generally know that to be is self-defense. But what it says is you can break a law that is not as serious as the harm you prevent. Okay? It's a principle that comes out of the Old Testament, among others. And so when the husband is driving at 100 miles an hour to get to the emergency room because something terrible is happening with his wife's pregnancy, and he has a real fear that she's going to die if he doesn't get there quickly, he has a defense. He shouldn't have gone 105 ordinarily, but he has a defense because it was justified in order to prevent the loss of life to his wife or child. And that's what's happening here. What's happening here is you have idealistic medical students, you have activists who are trying by responsible means to stop death from occurring. And in my mind, that is what the law says. The law says under Pennsylvania that this is justified and therefore unworthy of prosecution. I understand that our federal prosecutor and appointee of our president, Donald Trump, has a different view, but frankly, he and I have different views on a whole lot of things. And I do not, and I say this very respectfully to you, councilman, I'm not suggesting you're making this argument at all, and I have great respect for you, but I don't accept the notion that people are going to decide, gee, there's a supervised injection site, I've never injected drugs, I think it sounds like a good Saturday night to try. I mean, to me, that argument is about as hollow as the argument used to be that if condoms are available, then teens will try sex for the first time. No, actually, they were going to have sex anyway. They were just going to have unprotected sex, and there was going to be more pregnancy, and there was going to be more transmission of sexually transmitted diseases. People do not say, gee whiz, now that there's a supervised injection site, I can hardly wait to inject heroin. They just don't do that. So I do not accept the notion that it normalizes. I don't think it does that at all. I consider it to be a medical facility the purpose of which is to make sure people who don't have to die don't die so they can achieve their own redemption by recovery later.
Thank you for your very complete answer on that. And I have to say, also well-founded. I don't agree entirely with it, but every position you've had here is well-founded, and you have explained your reasoning, and I appreciate that.
That was Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner answering a question from City Councilmember Al Taubenberger about supervised injection sites. The City of Philadelphia is one of many in the U.S. that hopes to set up a supervised injection site officially and legally. Prevention Point and others who are working on this, we wish them all the luck in the world and hope for their great success. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. From the U.S., we now go to the U.K., where on Monday, May 20th, members of Parliament in the House of Commons had a debate on medical cannabis prescribing. We're going to hear portions of that discussion now. The motion is introduced by the Right Honourable Sir Mike Penning, Conservative Party MP for Hemel Hempstead.
Thank you very much indeed, Madam Deputy Speaker, and it's a real privilege to stand here to represent families from across the country and with colleagues from across the House who I'm sure will be scampering in all haste when they realise how fast the previous business has moved on. And this gives us a suitable amount of time, some 5 hours, to debate something which is really, really serious. Madam Deputy Speaker, on the 8th of April, Mr Speaker granted me an urgent question with support from other colleagues across the House on the medical use of cannabis, and in particular, when a young lady's medical cannabis had been removed from the family's possession when they came through customs at Southend Airport in Essex. The young lady concerned was a lady called Tegan, and Tegan's family are ardent campaigners, and they know, because they've been abroad and had the cannabis medical oil given to Tegan, that it had a really helpful effect. What had an even more dramatic effect on Tegan's family is probably not unexpectedly when Border Force confiscated the oil. I don't blame the Border Force and the Home Office, and we'll go into the history of how we've got to this position in a moment, but they were doing their jobs. However, after long conversations on the phone that evening and with conversations with the Speaker, I was really, really pleased when we got the UQ. The UQ meant that this House could come together and ask the question why. Why could it was an oil which had been prescribed, admittedly it was prescribed abroad, but it was prescribed, taken away from a young lady that desperately needed it because of the seizures that she had, because of the epileptic condition that she has. The oil was taken away. It was promised to the family, quite rightly, but it was promised that it wouldn't be damaged and it would be kept in a safe place. On the Saturday after the UQ, so a week later, a prescription was accepted by the Health and Social Care Department and the Home Office, eventually. And I say eventually, because the confusion around this medical product, prescribed medical product, is fascinating to me, even within the medical profession. The first prescription was rejected, and she wasn't allowed to have the oil back because it hadn't mentioned the word oil in the prescription. Even though the description of what the product was absolutely accurate, it didn't have the word oil. A new prescription was issued with the word oil, and it was released. And Madam Deputy Speaker, believe it or not, conversations took place as to who was going to pay for the transportation of that medical oil to Tegan.
I'm grateful to give it. Can I congratulate him and my colleague, my friend from the Gower as well, for the work that they've done on behalf of the APBG and on behalf of my constituent, Bailey Williams, and his family. And his mother has written to me about 2 Bays of Bakes. She unfortunately can't attend. But to say that Bailey really needs urgent access to medical cannabis because of the continuing effect his constant seizure activity is having on him. Does he feel as frustrated as I do that many months after the government, you know, first indicated that this could be prescribed, that he's having to describe what he's describing now, and I'm having to once again raise Bailey's case here on the floor of the House?
Honourable friend for his intervention, but that's what we're here for. Yes, we're frustrated. Yes, we're angry. But actually, we're here to do something which is really very important. And the only reason that the Home Office deregulated this drug and we're in this position today is because this House came together.
But
and more importantly, bear with me, so nothing away, but more importantly, the families came together. Families that have got young children, and I'm a father myself, like lots of colleagues in this House, and said, this is fundamentally wrong. Why is it illegal? It helps my child. And we know it helps my child. So that's what, why we're here today. I'll give way to my friend. Well,
am I right, therefore, in my assessment, that ministers have bent over backwards? We have acted in this chamber to ensure that these products are now available. And the problem is in the medical profession. And now what more can we do? I know it's interfering in the medical profession, but frankly, that's now becoming necessary.
I thank my friend, and he's absolutely right. The Secretary of State stood at that dispatch box following the urgent question and laid out in plain English that it is not illegal for a suitably qualified person to prescribe these medical products. So how are we still here? Perhaps as I go through the speech.
Can I interrupt you before you continue?
If I can, for a second. I give way.
Much. Because when we heard the Home Secretary make this initiative, we all thought those whose children were doing themselves or the fits were in effect ruining their children's lives would actually now, from now on, would actually find solace. Not for those whose children would be beyond help at that stage, but in the future. Given that that we want it, given that the Home Secretary wants it, given that the parents want it, given that the individual doctors want to prescribe, there is clearly some group at a regional level, isn't there, in the Department of Health that is actually stopping these prescriptions being issued in a way in which they can be delivered.
Many of the points that the Right Honourable Gentleman has alluded to in his comments, I'll touch on in my speech going forward. And the person that was ever so helpful was the Home Secretary, was ever so helpful was the Health Secretary, but actually the Prime Minister played an absolute diamond role in this, because we took Alfie Dingley and Hannah Deegan to number 10 with the petition. And I know, Madam Deputy Speaker, we're not meant to refer to the gallery, but they're up there and they're watching us, and they were scuttling up the stairs very quickly as well. So for me, I think it is vitally important that over the next 5 hours, we can have a proper debate this afternoon without concerns about time limits. If the government lose their business at 10, I'm not fussed. You know? So I can certainly write on, gentlemen, there is government business later on. There's a remaining state, so there is government business. I don't care about that. What we need to do is try and flush out what are the blockages, which is what the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care tried to do. Anyway, I will, and I will try and make some progress.
I'm very grateful, and he's in responding to another intervention, he's indicated that there is a degree of resistance within the NHS amongst clinicians. But does he not agree that it's not just that, it's the regulatory framework set by the government that is restricting access to this medication, and that we're still left in a situation where many people in acute pain are resorting to opioids, which are highly addictive and potentially fatal, whilst not being able to get access to cannabis legally, which can often ease their pain?
My honourable friend, we debate very often around health issues, and he was my shadow, I think, when I was the shadow health minister, and we agree on most things. And this particular issue around prescribed medical use of cannabis, pharmaceutical, we agree. The other area, which I think he was alluding to, is not in my opinion, for this debate. It's not on the motion. And the reason we've managed to get such huge cross-party support from families and around the country on this specific issue of prescribed medical use of cannabis is because we've stuck to that and not gone into the casual use. I'm going to make a little bit of progress, if I can, and then colleagues will have plenty of time. And I'm really chuffed that the Backbench Business Committee gave us this opportunity. Whenever the Backbench Business Committee had 5 hours for a debate on a Monday afternoon, I am simply thrilled, and I intend to use as much of that time as possible. I got a little note from the clerk saying that you should speak for 12 to 15 minutes, Mr. Penning. Yeah, in your dreams. The key for me, touching on the point, and I will come back onto this at the moment, is that there is a blockage in the health, the NHS. Let's talk about the NHS. There is a blockage if you can't pay for this prescription. Yeah. If you can pay for the prescription in the private area, there are consultants working inside the NHS and outside in the private sector, but private prescriptions are being honoured. The product is available in this country, perfectly legally, if you can afford it. And that is something that sticks really strongly in my throat, which I'm sure we'll come on to later on. Madam Deputy Speaker, at the UQ, at the conclusions, I think, to the UK, even though it's not in hindsight, I clearly heard the Speaker speak to the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, saying that whatever happens, we're not going to leave it. He was referring to me, we're going to go on and on and on about this until we get justice for these young people. And touching for a moment beyond the small cohort of desperately ill children, there are others in the country that would clearly benefit from the medical use. And I'm not a doctor, but I've had hundreds and hundreds of families that have come to me and said, does this mean we can get some help for us? From the MS Society, who have sent an excellent briefing to colleagues today, to the Brain Injury Trust, to many, many others. Constituents come into my surgery. And I have said, what we need to do is make sure that your specialists, the experts in your area, are saying that you need it, and then we can fight your corner. We have such specialists in this sector now. For children with epilepsy, young people with epilepsy, my constituent has just triggered over 18, so a mum would want me to make sure that I talk about post-18 as well as pre-18. That do get a tangible benefit in their seizures that they have from these prescriptions. From this prescribed pharmaceutical specialist, pharmaceutical provided, so we know exactly what's in it. And yet, we still have the crazy situation where hospitals are telling parents that if they bring it onto a ward where their child is ill as part of their ongoing medication, social services will be called to look into what they're doing with their family for a prescribed product from a consultant. My own constituent, who has just turned 18, when I wrote to her GP on behalf of the family and to the CCG who were blocking it, they said, we're not interested in homeopathic products. What on earth is going on inside the medical profession in this country when we haven't been able to get out there what the product... And by the way, Madam Deputy, if they don't know what it is, go and ask someone before you write stupid letters back to people and break their hearts. Because I had to send that letter on. And then actually look carefully at what we could do to help. It is not for any politician in this House, Madam Deputy Speaker, who is not suitably qualified to say to anybody, you deserve to have that product. What we must do is break down the blockages, which is what the Secretary of State alluded to in his speech from the UQ. Bear with me a second, I'll give way to him. Is to break down the block and find out why. And I'll come on to that again in a second, Madam Speaker.
Thank my right honourable friend for giving way. As he knows, he and I share a passion on this subject. Would he not agree that the absurdity that lies at the heart of this situation is that we have heroin prescribed legally as morphine, well understood for many years, but somehow, when it comes to cannabis being used for medical purposes, a kind of medical prejudice kicks in, even though we have morphine. And does it not highlight that there is an inconsistency here that needs to be addressed and addressed quickly?
Yes.
And I completely agree, my friend, and he is Teagan's constituency MP, which is I was referring to in one end. She got, as he knows, her medication 7 days late. But I'm convinced she would not have got that if we hadn't got the UQ in this House, which is why this debate and these sorts of things. And UQs, Madam Deputy Speaker. And, you know, I used to be a minister in government as well, and I was always panicking about whether there's going to be a UQ, whether there's not going to be. I always actually said, why don't we just do a statement? It's damn so easier, and we can control the agenda going forward. The business managers didn't always agree with me on that point. Can I just correct the record? It was a brain tumour charity that have sent an excellent briefing note to me this morning, not as I alluded to earlier on. Now, if we look, Madam Deputy Speaker, at the only, I may be wrong, but as we've, in our investigation, the only NHS prescription that has been issued was actually issued through the Home Office, Madam Deputy Speaker. Because Alfie Dingley got his medication through the panel that the Home Secretary set up with the expert group in the Home Office. So since we changed the law subsequently on that in November, as I'm aware, no NHS prescription has been honoured. We've had trusts clearly threatening consultants not to do it. We've had their professional bodies do the same, and I've seen some of the correspondence that's been out there. As I alluded to earlier on, we've had families threatened with social services if they brought the product into the hospital where their child was being treated when it was a prescribed prescription drug, which is perfectly legal in this country today. So the real issue is why, Madam Deputy Speaker, if you've got the money, got a donor, you've crowdfunded, or in my case, for my constituents, one of the manufacturers has given it to my constituents free because there's no way in the world that she could afford to do that. And I thank them for doing that, particularly from the family. Can that happen? So if you can afford it or you get a donor, you get it. And in the country that is so proud of the NHS, how on earth have we got in a situation that if you're poor, you don't get it? I give way.
I'm very grateful and I agree with the points that he's making. But the fact that the one prescription that's been issued has been through the Home Office raises an important point, doesn't it? That the Home Office should have nothing to do with what is a health issue, and it should be transferred without delay by the government to the Department of Health.
Well, to be fair, my honourable friend, it has been. And this was before we changed the law in November. So the panel that the Home Office set up while we looked at the changes of the law, and frankly, it really doesn't matter, but at the end of the day, there's a health minister at the dispatch box, there was a health secretary there for the UQ, it's clearly sitting in there. However, the connotations are still there with, for instance, bringing it into the country. But license, and I understand that, but it's moved, this drug has been moved out of its category into the fact that the Home Office, into the Health Department, and it can be prescribed. The issue is not prescription. Even though there is a very limited amount of private prescriptions, but they are being issued, and I thank the consultants that have met with me and my colleagues from across the House that have been campaigning on this, and they are willing to do it. The blockage, as far as I can work out, is that this was moved too fast, too quick, to help the families that we wanted help, when actually the Health Department and the Home Office wasn't ready. Which actually fascinates me, Madam Deputy Speaker, because 4.5 years ago, I've been a minister, I stood in Westminster Hall as the minister responsible for drug policy and said then that the government was minded to allow medical use of cannabis under prescription. Do they not read our debates? Do they not listen to what ministers have got to say? And whether they thought I was having a flyer there and as a Minister of State just doing it just because I felt it, like felt kind that day, actually, the then Home Secretary is now the Prime Minister. Yeah. And of course, I did it, of course, with her permission. I give way.
What did ministers do after my honourable friend made that point in Westminster Hall? He says that was 4 years ago. Why did it take until last year for the government to do anything about this?
You should have seen, Madam Deputy Speaker, the reaction of some of my civil servants when I got back to the Parliament after making that comment in Westminster Hall, and you'd understand exactly why it went absolutely nowhere after I said it. Even though I pushed and cajoled, actually it went nowhere. And sadly, or fortunately, I was moved to the Ministry of Defence after the 2017 election. So, Madam Deputy Speaker, why are we here today? Why have colleagues come into the chamber, which was completely empty 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, absolutely empty, when colleagues probably could go? I don't think there's going to be a vote.
Steady.
And the reason I don't think there might not be a vote is the government have indicated to me that they've accepted the motion, which is votable if we needed to. And I've indicated to the whips that if we needed to, I would push it to a vote. But I don't think we need to, simply because at the end of the day, once we've listened to the debate, the minister will realise, hey up, we've got to move faster. Are we moving fast? No. Are we moving faster than we was? Yes. But there's more that needs to be done. And why is that, Madam Deputy Speaker? That is because young people are having massive seizures that are affecting their lives of them and their loved ones, affecting their families and the quality of life that they are having in this country today. We can do something about that. We're on the journey of doing more about it. But I find it, as a father more than as a politician, why is it that they have to go to Holland or to Canada, find some money? If they can't find the money, you ain't going to get it unless someone donates it to you, or we crowdfund. In the 21st century, why are we allowing these children to be given drugs that are not working, that were never designed for the use they're given? While we have a products out there that are being produced by pharmaceutical companies, we know exactly what's in the product, and it may not help. It may not stop those seizures, but in some, it clearly does. And it is morally wrong for us to sit back and allow those children to suffer, and I have no intention of doing that going forward.
That was from a debate in the UK House of Commons regarding medical cannabis prescription. The motion was introduced by the Right Honourable Sir Mike Penning, Conservative Party Member of Parliament for Hemel Hempstead. And that's it for this week. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network, on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course, also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy. We'll